Kevin Savitt.
Carrington Vanston.
You pyramid plunderer, you.
Mm.
May the jackals feed well upon your bones.
I hear that you have fallen prey to my pyramid scheme.
Terrible. Terrible puns the listener sent us.
You are likely to be eaten.
You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torch of a match in your inventory. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torch of a match in your inventory.
How you doing?
I'm good. I'm pretty okay. How are things there in Canada land?
Fantastic. And you've been traveling, haven't you?
Did I? I have. I went to most recently to Seattle to the Living Computer Museum with some nerdy friends of ours from Kansas Fest, and we enjoyed the museum and got a behind the scenes tour and saw all the sites, and then we came back and went to Portland Retro Gaming Expo, and did all sorts of nerdy goodness there too.
That all sounds very fabulous. Although I gotta say, I'm always a little disappointed when I think about how the Living Computer Museum is called that, because it's got a bunch of computer displays that are active. Like, you can sit down, you can interact with them. It's
sure.
Not a staid thing, as opposed to there's like a pulsating brain in the center of it.
Wow.
It should be a living computer museum. Wow.
Well, now that Paul Allen's dead, hopefully that's what they're gonna do. put his brain into a jar and...
One would assume so. I, on the other hand, have had all sorts of computer problems. My lovely laptop has gotten bigger. Not because I put more RAM in or more storage. It just physically started rising. getting thicker.
You have the same one. You have the same one as me. The older MacBook Pro that's good, right? With all the ports.
With all the ports and the lovely keyboard, and I adore it. I adore it so much. And I guess it's my love for it has gone to its head, and it started to swell. So has a bulge in the center. I dropped it off on the weekend to the Apple Store, to the quote unquote genius who was, I believe, 9 years old. but backed everything up, handed it to the prepubescent genius, and I was told it could be up to 10 days for me to get it back, but I just got an email today saying, oh yeah, it's ready, come pick it up.
So, oh, great.
Excellent. To set those expectations and then beat them, that's probably good customer service.
Sure.
Unless they're going to hand it back to me and say, yeah, there's nothing we can do about this.
No, a new battery, you'll be fine. Assuming it didn't leak all over.
It shouldn't have. The weird thing is, like, I know where the battery is in those, and that's not where it's bulging. It's bulging right in the center, middle of the keyboard, and that ain't where the battery is. So I'm worried. Maybe the battery is squeezing out over to there or something. I don't know.
We will
find out. It is very strange. It must be the curse. The curse of the pyramid.
I forgot to mention, at the Portland Retro Gaming Expo, I brought the Adventures in Videoland setup, and with the roller coaster game that I had brought to Kansas Fest. I also took it to PRGE, and so there's a free play, you know, arcade area, and there's a free play console area, and I put it in the console area, and there was the Apple IIc with the Laserdisc, and I kind of like let go and, you know, let was. I just let I put my two C and my Laserdisc player and just like put it out there for people to play with all weekend, and the first thing I did is I walk away, and I, you know, after I set it up and got all the software running, and I came back 5 minutes later, and there's just like a 3-year-old sitting there just going bang 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 on my keyboard, and I was like, no, but I let it go, and a lot of people played it, and I heard a lot of good feedback, and a couple of people reached out to me. It was just like they found my YouTube video about it, and they were just like, is this the thing at Portland for Game Expo? This is amazing. I didn't know this sort of stuff existed. So a bunch more people have played it, and That was fun.
Well, that's pretty fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of felt like that when I went to the genius bar. You look away, you come back, 3-year-old, bang, bang, bang.
Except the 3-year-old is the genius hired by Apple to
exactly
fix that your computer.
Yep. It's just because I'm old, so everybody looks young now. That's how it works.
No, I get that. Yeah.
You get that. It. Yeah. You know.
Do I ever? Oh, yes. We played a game.
We played a game. We have feedback. We played a game that I think is divisive now that I've read about it, that some people were very upset about. And so I guess that's the thing we can talk about. I hadn't realized that.
Yeah. I still don't realize that. I look forward to hearing what you
Well, you will soon realize that, excellent. Along with our listeners. There will be realizations.
Mm. Okay, Carrington will throw down with his knowledge. Give us the knowledge.
That's what I'm going to do. Do you want to go over some feedback? We got a ton.
I do. We got a lot. We got a lot.
Lots.
Yes. Yeah. Why don't you start? Go first. Go.
Sure. What have we got? Somebody, Nathan wrote in, this is Cutthroats was our last last episode, and he's a great episode, but you're right, Cutthroats is just not a good Infocom game. It used to be quite a bit of, it used quite a bit of innovative technology. They had to invent new ways of handling time-based events, but you don't notice. All that underlying technology ended up taking too much storage space for that they really needed for the game. They wanted to make it replayable, but only having a room or two for actual treasure hunts was very limiting. Infocom worked so hard to make their games fit on the most popular platform, especially the C64, that by the time Cutthroats came out in 1984, it was getting to be too difficult. One of the things he commented on was bugs as well. I guess in the last episode, I talked about what I thought was discovering a bug in the game.
Right, and you were all excited because you found a bug for the first time.
I was all excited, but Nathan says, I hate to disappoint Carrington, but sometimes bugs are a matter of opinion, and I don't accept his quote-unquote bug. It was clearly a deliberate design choice. There's more of a case to be made for Kevin's, but by all means, Pete, please keep poking at the games and trying to break them. I love collecting the bugs. The thing is, I remember I got this. I can't remember what my bug was, but I remember thinking, I disagree. I still think it's a bug. I don't remember what it was.
Nathan's the guy who runs the one of the Infocom bugs sites.
Oh, did I not mention that? Yes. Sorry. Yeah. Nathan would know.
Like, yes.
But he would, it doesn't matter. I still am going to dig my heels in and say
you're allowed to be wrong and disagree with Nathan. I found a couple of bugs in Infidel. One of them was he sort of mentioned, I mean, after I finished the game, I looked at his bug site and he sort of mentioned one of them, but I think I found a kind of a more thorough version of this bug where you can have an object, you can burn it, and then you can make it appear again. It's like it was never destroyed. And then I found it a couple of other little bugs. So
Nathan says you didn't.
No, yeah, maybe. He might.
Actually, I think Nathan says only I didn't.
I probably didn't. Probably not. Well, maybe. You can try again. Yeah. Adam Summerfield wrote also about Cutthroats. And he said, I listened to your Cutthroats review, which was fun to listen to, even if not to play. Ooh, harsh. Now, I might be able to offer a theory on why Cutthroats and some other Infocom games feel less polished and sparsely implemented compared to others. Looking at this at the release years, it's likely to be the later games. By the mid-80s, some of the games were written by the imps but weren't actually coded. This was left to a programmer hired to do the heavy lifting of coding, not done by the imps, implementers, who would previously have applied extra depth. For example, Mike Berlin wrote and coded Infidel, but didn't physically code Cutthroats. The later games credited to Mark Blank were written by him, but not coded. I guess it was because the early games were written and coded by the chosen imp, and the games were finished when they were finished, and not before. Later on, they had release deadlines, so they hired programmers to work with the imps to do the programming. Faster turnaround, but also less depth of implementation.
I remember we talked about that when we gave the presentation at Kansas Fest about how by the end of the 80s, Infocom was basically just had been gobbled up at a fire sale by Activision. And one of the changes they made was want to like pump out games at a much faster rate. And so that's probably indicative of like that going on behind the scenes. I felt guilty after our last episode because we really, really came down hard on Cutthroats. And I know why.
Because it sucked.
I know, but I felt bad saying that about something. I've reviewed a lot of video games and stuff back when I did, and still do, tell Quinn I'm still doing them, 1 MHz. And those are, for the most part, all very positive reviews, because when I would play something negative, I simply just wouldn't review it, because, like, who wants to hear me say... But, of course, we're doing every Infocom game, so we're naturally going to do ones that we don't like as much and still review them. But I just don't have the heart to be a harsh critic. And, like, just afterwards, I felt very bad. I thought, like, the people who worked on the game will be all excited that we're going to talk about it, and they will tune in and just listen to us for an hour, just say that they made a bad thing. And I can imagine, like... being in their shoes, and it would make me sad. And I don't like to make people sad. So
no, I get that. Yeah, you make 10 games. You make 10 games. One of them is going to be the worst. no matter what. So even
that, folks, your game is the worst.
And I think one of the reasons we chose Infidel this time is because someone suggested that Infidel wasn't great either, but it was good compared to Cutthroats.
I think they said, the only way to make Infidel seem good is to play it right after Cutthroats.
So is that true or not?
Maybe I have a differing opinion.
Maybe.
So Karen Hales wrote in to say, hi, Carrington and Kevin. I'm glad you prompted... Oh, this is about an older game. We had talked about Hollywood Hijinks. I'm glad you prompted me to revisit Hollywood Hijinks. I have the gray box with the swizzle stick, but I didn't get far in the game in the 80s because I got stuck and was busy getting ready for college. All I remembered from before was the Atomic Chihuahua and frustration that I almost got it, but not quite. This week, I played the game through without hints, and I totally agree that these were fun, fair puzzles, and that the overall game is among the better ones. Years ago, I remember feeling vaguely disoriented about the layout of the game, and I figured out why. The story is supposed to be in Malibu, which is entirely a south-facing beach with the land to the north. But in the game, you approach the house from the south, and the coastline is beyond, on the north side of the house. It obviously doesn't matter for the quality of the game, but it bugged this California native. Great comment. I'm going to be aware of that if I ever revisit the game. Then she talked about some spoilery things. And in the end, she said something really nice about that. Finally, I listened to your interview on the Open Apple podcast. I want to say that your escapist need to focus on the games during these 4 years certainly parallels my own, probably true for many others. So thanks again. Anyway, that was just really nice feedback. And it's weird. I didn't know that about, because I don't know California that well. I didn't know about the coastline, but I'm sure if I ever replay Hollywood Hijinks, I'm going to not be unable to be aware of that. Like, it's going to stick with me now. Way to ruin the game, Karen.
Yeah, Karen. Yeah, well, now that Kavanaugh's on the Supreme Court, I think I need to start another podcast because
it's not getting
better.
Nope. But anyway, that was a really nice email, and I like the spoiler stuff was good too. But we don't want to talk about that because people might have not played through or listened to the Hollywood Hijinks stuff.
Yes,
that was a really good game, though. That's a game I did not have difficulty saying good things about. That was a really good one.
That was fun, James. Caberline said, I've been waiting for you guys to cover Cutthroats since I first discovered your podcast. I was so happy to download this latest episode and then shattered to hear your scathing review. You're hurting people with your opinions, Carrington.
They're just my opinions now. Okay.
That's right. Cutthroats was the first Infocom game I ever played, James writes, back in 1994 when my stepmom bought me a Commodore 64 and assorted games at a garage sale. The console was stained yellow by age and cigarette smoke, but I loved it. I spent many nights exploring Hardscrabble Island and mapping it on graph paper, trying to figure out the machinations of the various characters that populated the game. Cutthroats ignited my passion for interactive fiction and role-playing games like Dungeons & Dragons. It remains my favorite title to this day. Regardless of the panning you gave this cherished game, I love the podcast and looking forward to future episodes, particularly Planetfall. So thank you for the... nice email, James, and I apologize that we made you feel sad. But
he opened and closed his email really well, too, because the subject line was at a little greater than sign, like a prompt. So it was prompt Drake Grog, prompt G, prompt G, prompt G. He signed off with maximum verbosity.
I didn't notice that. Oh, that's so good.
So nice. Good. I was like, that is a well-crafted letter. I really dug it. Tracy wrote in, speaking of good things, wrote in with a great photo of a really amazing Infocom collection, like with lots of folio editions like Starcross Saucer and the Suspended Mask and a whole bunch, and wrote, hi guys, new listener here. Just discovered your podcast 2 weeks ago. I'm almost caught up now that I binged 8 hours during a recent trip. Thanks for making the journey go by a little faster. I was 15 in 1985 when I was all into Infocom games on my Atari 800XL that I had recently gotten to replace my first computer of 2 years, the Atari 400. And there's a computer with a great keyboard, huh? The one with the flat. Yes, the one with the flat membrane keyboard. Thanks. I bet Kevin knows the one. I taught myself to type on an Atari 400 using Infocom games as my teacher. To this day, I sometimes find myself hitting keys on the keyboard just a little too hard.
Infocom games are hard enough like on their own without using that keyboard. That just doubles the challenge. Good job.
In expert mode. I have many of my original Infocom game packages still, but I just noticed that I've somehow misplaced my copies of Seastalker, Spellbreaker, and Wishbringer. I'm kicking myself trying to remember what happened to them. I'm attaching a picture of my collection, that's the picture I talked about, and also a picture of inside my Infidel package. I still have my receipt, which is dated August 25th, 1985, and I paid $27.99, and also a paper of my original notes inside. It's not cheating if I use my own old notes, is it? I'm going to replay the game and see if I can finish before you guys do. Unfortunately, I've done my original floppies for the games, but I do have the lost treasures, so there's that. And I thought that brought up, first of all, great email, and the photo was amazing. I was like, that is a great collection.
Tracy bought the software at Babbage's at Northeast Mall in Hearst, Texas.
That kind of I adore that kind of stuff. Like when you open an old package of computer stuff and it's got original receipt or old notes from a game. I have a copy of one of the I think maybe Ultima 2, Ultima 3, something like that, that has I don't know if it's original older, but an older owner's notes from the game, all handwritten with all carefully laid out maps on graph paper. So eventually when I play that game, I'm totally using those maps. It's going to be like me and you, we're going back in. It's going to be awesome. So that's my question to you, though, Kevin. Is it cheating if you use your old notes? Like, it's kind of cheating if you use InvisiClues, I guess. But what if you use notes that you made yourself?
I believe that is not cheating.
Okay, good loophole. Okay,
no, because when I played Hitchhikers, I did not have notes, but I remembered puzzles. I remembered the solutions to puzzles that I did a long time ago, and you can't help that. That was the notes in my head, and so the notes on paper are simply an extension of that.
So, does time enter in it though? Like, if I look at a walkthrough and take a bunch of notes, and then turn around and turn back and play the game with those notes.
Okay.
It seems there has to be at least a significant...
But no, that's cheating because you looked at a walkthrough. It doesn't matter when you looked at the walkthrough.
But I'm not going to look at the walkthrough again. I'm only going to... because once you look at the walkthrough, any playing in the future is always cheating.
I believe
so. Is that how that works? Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Sure. Yes, that's my arbitrary line that I've...
Okay, so if I pay somebody else to walk through and then write the note, there's got to be a way. There's some sort of Schrodinger way to do this.
Sure. Schrodinger way.
I can't pronounce it, so I can do it. Doug wrote in to suggest a non-Infocom game for us to consider someday, Madness in the Minotaur, which is a vintage game. And the reason he suggested it was it's in real time. And he said that really changes the way you interact with the game because it's not just like you pause as long as you want and type your next command. It's ticking along in real time. That would be a really, really different experience, I think.
Yes. Yeah, that would, really push you to...
Yeah. Yeah. So I wrote that down.
Because some of these games just there for... an hour or a day or a week trying to solve a puzzle. And
I usually do.
You can't do that when the Minotaur is coming at you in real time.
Nope.
Or whatever happens.
Oh, another really nice email we got that was mostly full of spoilery things, so I can't really talk about it. It was Giovanni wrote in with comments, and he nicely told us to read them after we'd finished playing.
Right, and I actually still haven't read them because I forgot to read them after.
Because he said it would include spoilers. I mean, that is some nice feedback sending, Giovanni. Like, when you do it right at the beginning, saying, okay, this is going to have spoilers for the game you're about to play, come back and read it later. One of the things he talked about, though, was how... Infidel has a lots of learning by death stuff, which he's right, he does. It does, and we will talk about that. But I thought it was great. I was just really appreciative of the way it was written. For instance, I after we played Infidel, I subsequently went and looked at. I was going to read the site for the what's the site that talks about Infocom games I can never pronounce, the Digital Antiquarian.
Yes,
and I got like a paragraph in. And it has a spoiler for another game we haven't played. So I stopped reading. I'm like, come on, man. So I haven't read the rest of it because I was like, So it has spoilers. It warns you. It says, this will have spoilers for Infidel. But I think it should say this has spoilers for Infidel and another Infocom game that is in the future for the Eaten by a Gru guys. Oh, well.
Yeah, I haven't read the Digital Antiquarian. I try not to do that until after we record the podcast because, like I've said this before, but Jimmy Marr's ideas are so good that I can't help but make them my own. So I don't want to steal from him wholesale, so I try not to.
I was going
to
read it today. I did feel like stealing from him, but
sure.
Now I can't. With spoilers.
Let's see, more email. We got one from Philip Reynolds. Says, hey, Grooves, I got referred to your show when looking for resources on writing text adventures. I started listening and got hooked right away. Your insights into this type of game and what constitutes good and bad writing and design have been a great resource as I start to think about designing my own game. That I got to say, that makes me super happy that I didn't envision that when we do this. It's going to make people maybe not make the same mistakes that or at least make games that we will like more, if not, you know, not even mistakes, but just Carrington, the world is creating more games that you and I personally will enjoy because we're making this podcast and people
excellent
are doing what we say,
as it should be.
That's right. I consistently listen past the spoiler fence, Philip writes, except for Enchanter, which I am currently trying to play through. I've been stuck for a couple of days, but determined to win without cheating. That's how you go 3 years without finishing a game. That's my comment, but not his, but take it from me. I want to figure out soon so I can listen to the rest of that episode. And another suggestion, if you ever want to branch out into graphical puzzle games again, I'd love to hear you guys talk about Dreamforge/ASC's Sanitarium from 1998. I played that game as a young teen, and Chapter 2 scared me so badly I stopped playing it for a year. I came back, though, and it became one of my favorite computer games ever, an all-time favorite point-and-click game, Sanitarium. We should start a Google Doc of games that people suggest to us.
We get lots of good ones.
Yeah, Sanitarium and what's the Minotaur one you just mentioned.
Yep. And earlier ones as well. I mean, I've got all the email feedback we had before, so I'd be able to search through it. And I try not to take it personally that, like, we started doing these Infocom games and, like from day one, people say, okay, when you get done with that, you want to do this later? Like, but we're trying to do this. It's like,
yep.
We got a nice quick email from James, who wrote in to say, once again, a wonderful episode, though I must be the only person who really enjoyed Cutthroats. I cut my teeth on Scott Adams games, and it must be that I enjoyed Cutthroats so much since it was my first Infocom game and... introduced me to such a great parser, and that's always stuck with me. So thanks for all the time and work out in the podcast. I thought that was a good point, because, like, maybe it's the case that we're kind of gorging on these Infocom games, and Cutthroats was a different sort of thing, and maybe it's the difference we didn't like. Maybe if they're all like that, we would just get used to it. I don't know. Again, I'm trying to find excuses because I feel guilty.
And Mark,
he's right. The Scott Adams games, I have very little experience with. Though I'm pretty sure I've played at least a couple. I must have. And those are, I think, the two word parsers. They're not
right. Yeah.
And so that's less descriptions, fewer descriptions, and less words. Whatever.
I dabbled with them a little bit, but never seriously have tried to ever solve one.
Nobody writes in to suggest we play those.
No.
Yeah.
Well, Scott Adams is active on Twitter. I think he follows me, so he might actually write in and suggest we play his games one day.
Maybe he listens to this, and I just said something mean about him, and I... Right. Oh, as a Canadian, I would just like to say sorry for everything I've done on this podcast.
All right. I think we should just do one more here, because we're 20 minutes in and haven't actually talked about the game at all.
And we do have a bunch of people wrote email, and again, other people wrote in saying, like, here's some stuff, and we've got email I haven't even read yet, because they said there'd be spoilers for Infidel, so right. I think we're not even reading some of the stuff, because I haven't even got to it yet.
Mark Yauza, I don't think that's pronounced, I like
it. Oh, yes, it is.
Yauza. Mark wrote in, he said he hosts an interactive fiction podcast called the Let's Play Podcast. We aren't nearly as steeped in the history of IF or retro computers, but we try to keep the medium alive in our own way. In the podcast, I introduce guests to a newer IF, and we play it to completion in audio form. I attempt to create a radio play-style atmosphere with music and sound effects. I am sure you are very busy with Infocom and playing and IF history research. No, we're not. If you do spare a moment, please consider listening to the Let's Play podcast. I have not actually listened to this yet, but it sounds great. I love a radio play style thing, and so I'm putting it out there in case someone wants to check it out. It's at letsplaypodcast.com.
We sounds mostly like get very, very flattering email. Like our listeners are incredibly nice. And I found that for the, every podcast I do, but for the most part, if people are going to take the time to write in, they write in very positive stuff. But one of the few negative letters we got was on from the last episode where somebody wrote in specifically saying, boy, it'd be nice if you guys did a bit of research. you didn't like cutthroats and it's probably because you don't know what you're talking about. And so it's nice that somebody else wrote in and say, clearly we seem to be doing a lot of research. I will say the first person maybe
you can fool some of the people some of the time. That's
we don't do a lot of research. No. It's really just play the games and tell you what we think.
Right. That's true. I mean, that's the goal of this. For me, I have another podcast that is a lot of research, and I didn't want a big research podcast. I wanted to play games and talk to my friend Carrington.
Me too. And,
yeah. You want to talk to your friend Carrington?
I do want to talk to my friend Carrington. He's one of my favorite friends.
Aw. Nice. Mine too.
I'm like a nesting doll of me.
Speaking of nesting dolls, I'm rushing to talk about Infidel.
You're my favorite person. That's pretty good, actually. I think we had a thing, a link, a note. Like, I don't know. You're throwing me off with that. That's pretty awesome. But somebody made a really cool way to play stuff online. And we should probably talk about it.
Yes. Yes. Where is that? Is that an email too? Somebody wrote in, Twittered to us to let...
It blew my little mind.
Mm-hmm. Yes. What's it called? Where is it? Okay, so you're going to find the name of it while I start talking about it. Yes, because I'm talking and you're researching, because we do a lot of research on this podcast.
I'm on a borrowed computer, dude. notes.
Somebody, oh, that's right. You're not even on your normal...
cobbled this thing together over the last few hours.
I'm sorry for my lack of preparedness. Somebody wrote in on Twitter and let us know about a new... a new Z Machine parser that is online, or you can get it via Git, and it is it's very cool because you can play your games in the browser or on your machine, and it has some awesome features, including automatic mapping.
Yeah, it does auto mapping.
Yes.
And if you play Zorkin, auto mapping will show you why that map is nonsense, because the auto map is like, I'm doing my best here.
Yeah. I went to GitHub and it was like, here's the things you look at recently. It's called Encrusted, and it's at, I'll put the link in the show notes. It's at sterlingdemille.com/encrusted. And I will read how it describes itself. A modern Z machine for the classics. Encrusted is an interpreter for Infocom era interactive fiction games like Zork. So basically, you can drag your Z file into it. I just dragged in the Infidel file, and you play in the browser, and it's all very pretty, nice fonts and everything. And then it has some features, including the auto mapping, which is very cool, and then also undo. In fact, it's unlimited undo. So you made a bunch of mistakes and you died, you can just undo 20 times and go back to a safer, earlier time in the game before you screwed up. I started in Zoom as usual, and then I discovered this and switched to it, and I played using Encrusted.
Oh, did you? Cool.
Yes. Yeah. I found some bugs in Encrusted, which I mean, this is a new thing.
You can find bugs.
Yeah, I did. and I reported them in the GitHub, and they're, I believe, working on them. And there was a couple times, actually, I wasn't sure if I had found a game in a bug in the game, or if it was the interpreter, the Encrusted interpreter, which, you know, is still new and kind of buggy. Let's see. Yeah, it has the undos, and has live mapping, and has something called object tree inspection, which I don't fully understand, but basically you can like see a list of all the objects and where they're originally located. But yeah, as far as I'm concerned, the mapping is pretty cool.
Can you alter that tree? And all the things are in the room with me. Watch.
Oh yeah, just drag.
Game move. Take I need all. The, done.
I need the, yeah, that's a great idea. You win. Anyway, so it's a neat Z Machine interpreter, and I am a fan. I think I'm going to keep using it. I tried it the browser based version only, but it even worked when I was on an airplane. I had previously set it up with, you know, when I had connection and brought in my Z file, and I managed to play for a couple hours on a flight, and it worked fine. So
nice.
Yeah.
I intended to play Infidel using Pitch Dark, which is the front end that 4AM and Cucumba have put together. But yeah. I didn't for Infidel, but I might for our next one, because I'm itching to get back on. I have the original Infidel package, so we'll talk about that, but I played it on Zoom because I knew I'd be away for part of it, and then I ended up not playing while I was away. But I'm itching to play another one with the old Apple II, so I think I'll be using Pitch Dark for the next one.
So you had never played Infidel before, right?
I have not.
My first time, I just had
the package.
Okay, you had the package, and you used the package while you played, correct? You wanted to have the feelings.
It has amazing feelings.
All right. Well, let's talk. Actually, before we talk about them, let's talk about what it says about it on the box.
Yeah. I'll grab my box. What do you do?
Yes, you do that. Infidel is a it's a package, and there is a picture on the package of Infidel in like big red, kind of almost bloody letters, and there is a picture of a guy in a dressed like he's out in the desert, like in Egypt, and he's got the hat thing on to keep your head from getting sunny, and there's a pyramid behind him and a camel, and the pictures are ripped in half, and it says Fiamin Allah, hereafter you shall you shall pursue your fool dream of the modern of the hidden pyramid and its riches alone. May jackals feed upon your bones. On the back,
the funny
says,
thing is, the point of this game is you're basically playing this guy, the D-bag in the front with the glasses, and right behind him is a giant pyramid. And this game opens with you desperately trying to find this hidden pyramid. I'm like, dude,
it's right behind you.
It's right behind you, and it's massive.
Infidel finds you marooned by your followers in the heart of the deadly Egyptian desert. A soldier of fortune by trade, you've come hither in search of a great lost pyramid and its untold riches. Now alone you must locate and gain entry to the tomb, decipher its hieroglyphics, and unravel its mysteries one by one. Through the antechamber, the barge room, the chamber of Ra, death will lick at your heels as you race to the shattering climax of this match of wits between you and the most ingenious architects, builders, and murderers of all time, the ancient Egyptians.
Okay, what's cool is I'm holding my Infidel package.
Yes.
And the back of the box has completely different writing.
Really?
Yep. You're reading that. I'm like, that's not what this says at all. Huh. Now, I have the folio edition, I guess, like the original big one, and the feelies are amazing. And the back of mine says, if I can read it here, as I'm in the dark, I'm going to try to tilt it down and read from the light of this monitor.
Better not let it get too dark in there. You're likely to be eaten by a grill.
There's an old Egyptian fable that tells how a sacrilegious camel once dined on a high priest's pocket watch, only to awaken in the morning with a belly full of ticks. The moral, needless to say, is that one should never bite off more than one can stomach. Evidently, you fail to heed this wisdom, else why would you, a small-time explorer, dare to brave the smoldering heart of the Egyptian desert? Of the Egyptian desert, in search of a great lost pyramid. Now, too late, you suspect that your boldness has been your undoing. For at this very moment, you find yourself marooned by your followers, pursued by the vultures of death, and sustained only by the faint hope that you can somehow survive to reach the pyramid, where the skullduggery, pitfalls, and challenging adventures will really begin. What indomitable inner resource is it that drives you ever onward against such desperate odds? Pride? Unflinching devotion to the cause of archaeological science? Or could it possibly be the prospect of the treasure concealed within the tomb as worth enough on the open market to keep you rolling in filthy lucre for the rest of your born days? We leave the question open with this footnote. Your quest transcends mere fortune. Here, amid the shifting sands of eternity, dignity and self-esteem are at stake, for you are branded Infidel. See, totally different writing on the back.
Wow, that one's way better than the writing on the back of the box.
It's also a little more indicative of the game that you find, this idea that you're in it for the filthy lucre.
Oh, yeah. He's totally in it for the filthy look. Yeah.
Which is the thing we got to talk about. Like, I'm interested to talk about the fact that you're kind of playing a character in this game versus just being you. So.
Yeah. In most of the Infocom games, not all of them, but most of them, you are kind of an undefined character. You are you. You could be male. You could be female. You could, you know, it's you're just vague. And in this one, you are definitely a particular character with particular traits, and he's not a nice guy.
Yeah, your avatar isn't the blank slate that most of them do. Like, you usually sit down, and it's a prompt, and it's in first person. And Infocom often talked about these as being interactive fiction. They're not quite like that. Like, it's not like you're just reading a work of fiction. Like, you're playing the role, and the character is relatively undefined. It's just this blank slate. You sit down, and it's you, and you're in this story, and what do you do next? And that's the thing that's different here, is you're kind of given this character you're playing, although the gameplay itself is just the same. Like, you type, I like, go north, take scarabs. I'm trying to say things that are not in the game, but that sort of stuff. And there is north in the game. I spoiled it. You go north in the game. You're not in Malibu or whatever. But here, like, the feelies and the opening of the game and some of the text in the game really let you know this character that you're supposed to embody, who is not really a nice person. And I think that's the thing that really separates it. The reason that, or the things that you're doing, this idea of going in and plundering a pyramid, are kind of exactly what you were doing in Zork 1. And yet that's kind of, I think, what a lot of people got upset about with this game, it seems, at the time, that you're playing a negative person and it's this terrible plundering of pyramid, like this, not cultural appropriation, but, you know, grave robbering. So you're a big grave robber. But that's exactly what was going on in Zork and in other games. But I guess this, because it's more, it's like taking place in the real world, and it's like, this is you in 1920s Egypt, and like, go rob a pyramid, and this is bad, and you are a bad person. So probably that didn't sit well with a lot of people who play the game. You sit down, and it's, you're kind of being chastised for this character that you haven't chosen to play. It's just like, you don't get a choice in this game. It's not that you're said, oh, do you want to go in the pyramid for this reason or for that reason? Like, no, you are forced to play a role, and then you are chastised for playing that role. Anyway, I think that seems to be what people were upset about at the time, and the game didn't sell that well, I think, compared to other. I mean, it sold, like, you know, 40,
well, I think what copies, they, but. I think what they were trying to do, to their credit, was lean a little more on storytelling. It's not just a treasure hunt. I mean, it is, but you know, you learn something about the person doing the treasure hunting, and their backstory, and why they're going it alone, and what terrible things they've done to the people who used to work with him.
It's a much richer tapestry they start you off with. Like, when you look at Zork, you are west of a White House. What's your history? I don't know. I popped into being fully formed west of a White House. No backstory, and off you go, and that's it. Whereas this has, like, the game picks up directly after the feelies. We'll talk about the feelies in a second. And you have, like, a whole backstory and a whole character thing leading into the story. So, like, when the game opens, it's right after all these feelies you had and that have given you a real reason to be there. Like, they fleshed out this character. Now, it happens to be that the character is a total D-bag. It's like, you're playing Elon Musk in Egypt. So I think maybe that's less enjoyable for people. I don't know.
Like, I don't know.
The fact that it was fleshed out. I like that it was a character.
I think I do too. I mean, I appreciate the attempt to add more of a story, and it's not just, it's Zork in the desert.
So. And we talked about that, I think, either in Zork 1 or Zork 2, and maybe during Enchanter as well, because isn't that the one where you get to see a version of the Zork avatar?
Like, I think that was this. One of the enchanters. Yes.
Yeah, one of the. Yeah. Anyway, because it's hard to. Eventually, you become aware of this idea that basically you're just. It's not. You're looting. Like, you're just walking around and just, like, stealing everything. Like, and that's what you're doing. That's what adventure is. It's just about. Like, we talked about that earlier. So it makes. It's not surprising to me that the imps in Infocom would have become aware of that as well. There comes this point where you realize we just keep writing games where you're just, like, burglaring everything. Like, it's like, should, and once you're aware of that, it's hard to not be aware of that, and it's got to inform the game a little bit.
You can just imagine them going, if we're doing burgling, why don't we just do grave robbing? Like, okay.
let's just go for it.
Yep. So why don't you tell us a little bit about those beautiful feelies you have there?
Sure. Okay. Yeah. So the package itself, I've got the folio edition. So it's like a large box, but it's really thin. It's like a traditional folio. So it's in inches, I don't know, 10 by 13 or something like that. So it's very large. But when you open it up, it's just like a, it's supposed to look like, I don't know what these things are called. Brownish manila envelope type things, but a folder. And so it's got pockets on either side. And so in my left pocket, although I don't know this is how it was sold, just in the version I have, in the left pocket are the following. So I've got the Infocom disc, or sorry, the Infidel disc, which for me is in a Dyson sleeve. So that's not right. It's got the orange Interlogic reference card for the Apple II, because mine's the Apple II version. So this is the thing that would be different in each copy. So this is how to boot up your Apple II game and such. So if you had a Commodore version or something, then it would just be like, oh, we're so sorry. And then you swear to buy an Apple. And so it's got a business reply card where I can fill out my owner warranty, which I have not done. It's got a fold out. Yeah, so this
if you fill out that card, you'll get a free subscription to the New York Times. So you should
excellent.
Really.
Excellent. I look forward to that. Yeah. And so this has got an 8.5 by 11 page that folds out. So it's actually 11 by 17 folded. And it's a list of Infocom games and accessories, I guess, that were available at this time. It's got Zork 1, Zork 2, Zork 3, and Enchanter. And on the inside, it lists Starcross, Suspended, Planetfall, Deadline, Witness, and then Infidel. So I think Infidel is about the 10th game or so. And then on the back is a neat grid that I hadn't seen before. It's also available from Infocom game from Infocom, and it's InvisiClues, the ultimate hint service. And it's a big grid where you can look up your 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Yeah, so 10 games from Zork 1 to Infidel in a big column. And on the left side, it's got the systems. Apple II, Atari, IBM PC, Commodore, blah, 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 all the way down to PDP 11. And then it has the cost and the product number for the matching InvisiClues. So if you want the Deck Rainbow InvisiClues for, say, Suspended, mm-hmm. then I know it's product IS2-DE2 and it's $59.95. And so you can order them and it tells me which ones, like Osborne, doesn't have them for the first five games and things. So it's just neat. I had not seen that grid before. Hmm. So it's got that. It has another fold-out page here. This is an envelope that has like an attached bit that folds out that you'd be able to fill out a form and fold it into its own envelope. And it's from Bilk and Weedle, Fiduciary Insurance Company of Upper Mongolia. And it is, I guess, yeah, it's an ad and an order form for Zork hint books, which I guess are the same thing as Infocom. Oh, no. Okay, so it says that they include InvisiClues and also a cleverly drawn map to help you. So these are the hint books available. And so you can just check off which game do you want the hint book for, and you fill out a little Visa MasterCard thing at the bottom. Does it let me send by check? Yep. Oh, you can send check, money order. Excellent. I love old things like that. Then there's the True Tales of Adventure. So this is a magazine, and it's quite big. It's a bunch of pages here. And this is similar to the one that was included in the what was the last game we played?
Cutthroats.
So Cutthroats had True Tales of Adventure as well. So it's another one of those magazines.
Yeah, it's like a magazine. I like that. I think Cutthroats came. I mean, no, Cutthroats definitely came later. But it's like they made another issue of the magazine, which I thought was a nice continuity between games.
Yes. So all these adventure Infocom games would come with True Tales of Adventure, and this is it's quite funny. So it's got a whole bunch of things buried alive by a pyramid and a mysterious plastic disc can talk, which is it's an article about how to use your floppy disk. So most Infocom games will have in the browsy a sample adventure. And so you can read through it. It'll say you type this, go north. And it's a way to, if you've never played a text adventure before, you can read the sample adventure and you can see the kind of things that get typed and look at the feedback from the computer and get a feel for playing the game. And I think it's a really good idea. That is something that Infocom did really well. Here, the way they work it is they embed that in an article. Big game hunters stumble on incredible discovery. Mysterious plastic disc can talk. And it's all about this weird floppy disc and how to interact with it. And so that's how they embed it here. And one of the nice things about this article, the very first words are, "It's true," says a very famous expert, blah, blah, blah. Every article in this begins with the words, "It's true." You pick up anything. 95-year-old treasure hunter reveals secrets of eternal youth. "It's true," I say, famous adventurer scribe vanishes as helpless friends look on. "It's true," his friends remember. I hadn't noticed either at first. I was like, that's pretty good. So it's got some hint things, and it's the set the stage, set the environment kind of magazine. And I think it's really well done. I really like it. The feelies in this are great. The best ones, though, are in the other pocket. So I'll pull those out. I got to be kind of gentle because they're papery. Not a newspaper. Okay, so in here is an envelope from the Hotel Americaine, airmail, filled out to go to Rose Ellingsworth. And so the way this game works is you've been essentially hired by Rose to do this adventure, although she thought she was hiring this Craig person, and you're like a bad person who's pretending that Craig's along with you, but he's not. And so this is an envelope addressed to her because before this game opens, like right before the game opens, essentially the night before the game opens, you're in your tent and you update your diary. And so in here are one, two, three, I guess four of these four pages, no, three double-sided 8.5 by 11 pages handwritten that are your diary. So it opens with July 8th and it's just like scrawled text, and it goes through July 13th, July 22nd, August 6th, August 8th, and through to August 12th. And that's the last diary entry. And so this is how you find out about your character. And when you read this, you get the backstory. You learn about Craig. You learn about like what you are as a person, why you're in Egypt, what you're looking for, like what your goals are by reading your own diary. And the diary ends, like I said, dated August 12th, where you say, okay, I'm going to write a letter to Rose and bring her up to date because I want to make sure she doesn't hire somebody else or send somebody else here. And I'll do that, but I'll just, you know, a glass of Guinness or whatever will get me through. And then there's two more pages on Hotel American stationery, which you must have just brought with you, dated August 12th, and is Dear Rose. And so this is the letter you're writing to send to her, and that's why you've got that envelope pre-filled out. So the letter begins, and it talks about all that stuff, but then it gets kind of sloppier and sloppier writing, and it just starts to doodle, and it says funny things, and your mind goes to weird places, and by the page four, it kind of just peters off and goes down the left.
Right, he's just, by the page, it's just getting like, he's getting wonkier and wonkier, he's like drunk or high or something, and by the end of it, he's just completely off his rocker, and it just like ends mid-sentence.
Exactly, because the whole point is you start this game waking up having been drugged by your crew who are sick of you and can't take it anymore. And so they've drugged you, taken all the stuff and taken off, and you're left alone in this encampment in the desert. And so I thought it was a great way to say, because you read this, you're like, oh, you've been, and then you start the game, and that's great. Also included.
No, about this, I really like, I mean, he tells himself one thing in the diary. He tells Rose something else in the letter, and then you kind of get another perspective of things when you actually start the game. Mm-hmm. So I really enjoyed the unreliable narrator aspect. You can see how this character is not a good person, and he's kind of how he just like is lying to himself and is kind of
he's deceitful on all levels. Like he's not a good dude that you're playing.
Yeah, and if you read the stuff carefully, you know, just read it all, it puts the story together very nicely. I wish that that level continued through the game, because I feel like the setup is great with all this stuff, and then you play the game, and there's some callbacks to Craig and Rose and stuff through the game, but not very much.
Kind of only at the very beginning and the very end, it seems.
Yeah.
Like, yes, I too found that as well. It talks about Craig a bit, Craig with the E on the end, kept bugging me the way it was spelled.
Craigie, yeah.
Craigie, old Craigie. So anyway, also included here is a big fold-out map on like a rice paper kind of thing, a very thin paper, and it's a map of the encampment. So it shows the Nile, the location of the encampment, it's dated, it's got an X to say where the hieroglyphic cube the person thinks it is. This is the map that you took from Craig. And then around the outside are the longitude and latitude marks. And so it's just like the map you're going with as a starting point, and it's got kind of a hint about where the encampment is and where this cube thing can be found. And then it's got another page here also on that kind of rice paper with different, what I like is it's different handwriting, because this is clearly the stuff from Craig, with an example of this hieroglyphic cube. And so the idea of this cube that measures 4 inches by 4 inches by 4 inches, it's got hieroglyphs on the front, and it has a hieroglyphic symbol chart that shows like a symbol and then the English translation. And that's your beginning code key for the hieroglyphs you'll find inside the game. And so it tells you like the pound symbol, the hashtag, is the word the. And the way these hieroglyphs works is their one-to-one correlation to English, like as if Egyptian was just like exact grammar as English in the exact same order. They just use these weird symbols instead, but whatever. I still dig it. And so it's got the cube, and then you can translate the stuff in the cube using that little code key, and then that gives you a bunch of hieroglyphs, and then the rest you kind of have to figure out in the game on your own from context, which, you know, is totally easy to do. It's not actually that difficult, but it's kind of a fun little thing. I liked it. And the way the hieroglyphs work in the game is they are really just ASCII characters. They really are things like two quotation marks and an at sign. That means this. So, or an arrow in this. So it's all stuff that you could do in ASCII. So, which is, I think, a good way to do it in a non-graphical system that would work on all those computers. Mm-hmm. So I loved it. I thought the Invisi clues were great. They're really tactile. It's lots of paper. I like the handwriting.
The browsies.
I loved it. The Feelies. That's the word I'm looking for. I got words. The whole package was amazing. I think these are my favorite Feelies so far.
Wow.
And there's nothing like super quirky in it. Like, we don't get a swizzle stick. We don't like the bag of, or the fluff and the invisible spaceship from Hitchhikers, like in the black sunglasses. Like, they were more fun Feelies. Those are probably the most fun Feelies so far. But these ones were so perfect for the game. Mm-hmm. Like, I just read this stuff. I totally understood the character. It got me in the mindset. So I sat down with a drink and the right lighting and the Infocom package. And I read these letters and I fired up the game and it put me in the perfect mindset to play this. And it just, which is exactly what I would want the Feelies to do. So you don't have a collectible swizzle stick, but everything was appropriate to the game. Like, this is the stuff you would start off with. And I thought it was great.
Good.
I love all the paper stuff. I like the map. Mm-hmm. I like the hieroglyph things. Love the letters and the diary stuff. The Tales of Adventure booklet, all of it. Like, just 10 out of 10. An amazing package. I love the packaging.
That's awesome. Well, I was just looking at PDFs online, so I didn't get to enjoy the physicality of it, but I enjoyed them as well, but probably not 10 out of 10. But
I was surprised at how much I love it. Like, I just, like, this is my favorite package that we've had so far.
Wow. So the game was in the category of Tales of Adventure. The working title for this game was Pyramid, which makes a lot of sense. And it was credited to Mike Berlin with Patricia Fogelman. So it was, the release date's a little tricky, and I actually have some homework for people on this one. The release date, I believe, was November 1983, but Wikipedia, for some reason, very specifically says it was released on September 16th, 1983, without really citing that.
That's weird.
So anyway, late 1983... I was curious. Oh, also, I wanted to mention that usually in the show notes, I put a link to the Infocom newsletter article where it's first mentioned. Now, the Infocom newsletter originally was called the New Zork Times, and then later they renamed it to the Status Line after they got a lawyer letter from the New York Times. I believe that Infidel should have been announced in the fall 1983 issue of the New York Times, which I pegged to be volume 2, number 4. As far as I can tell, that's not online. Most of the Infocom newsletters are scanned and are online at archive.org and a bunch of other places. There's a couple issues maybe missing, including this one. So I couldn't find the original announcement. So if anybody has that, or either can point me to it online or has the original they can scan, let me know, because that was disappointing not being able to see that. But yeah, like you said, it was like about the 10th game.
But Infocom stuff is so incredibly documented. It's weird that there wouldn't be like 30 copies of all this available online readily.
Yeah, and for many of them are. I mean, multiple people have scanned, but this was, I think, early enough that, I don't know, maybe there's not as many out there. Or my Google Foo skills were just not that good, you know, the couple times I looked. This was a plundering the pyramid sort of game. I was wondering how much this game was relied on the other plunder the pyramid thing I can think of from back in those days, which were Raiders of the Lost Ark, that genre.
Yeah, I was totally thinking this game, Indiana Jones, and like it seems and it makes sense that like if you're thinking I want to write an Infocom game and I want to do this kind of thing, like the idea of an adventure game is you go around and there's traps and you're trying to get riches. What better setting than like you think the very first one they would do would have been this?
Yeah, I mean you're in the pyramid. There's traps going off. It sometimes felt very Indiana Jones. So, like I said, this game came out in late 1983. Raiders of the Lost Ark came out in June of 1981, a full 2 years before this. But I was thinking maybe this is more like Temple of Doom. But Temple of Doom, the second Indiana Jones movie, didn't come out until May 1984, so almost a year after this game. So I think maybe Indiana Jones stole ideas from Infidel. Perhaps. I don't know.
Could be. Well, but there's, early, there's King Solomon's Mines, which is like the H. Rider Haggard thing. So that's like 1880s. So that kind of predates all of this.
You're smart about movies. I don't
know. But also just like and which was, well, I mean, the movie wasn't then, but I think things like that and Man Who Would Be King and Lost World and stuff, I think there was a in the 70s, resurgence of this kind of thing with a lot of unfortunate undertones and racism and stuff like that. And so it is what it is. The world generally gets better. It's my I'm happy about it. It's supposed to get better. Hear that, world? You're supposed to get better.
Waiting.
Just reminding you, world, you're supposed to get better. So I think that kind of thing, like it's always been popular for like a few hundred years now. Like
sure.
The adventure but it just seems like if you're going to have a trap filled exotic location, pyramid comes to mind, and like, going to be one of the first five things you think of easily.
Right.
On any date.
Not a house in the forest. And the
exactly. Right. So anyway, perfect setting. It's a really, really ideal setting. It's not a game that pushes the boundaries much. It's a game that kind of like, it's like, yeah, this is an adventure game and you're going to collect stuff and you're going to use things to solve puzzles. It's not like in the playing of the game didn't seem like, oh my goodness, they must have invented a new thing. Other than I wonder if this is the earliest instance of having a backpack. You get a backpack in this and it's going to be from what I can tell from the chronology of these things, this might be Infocom's first and maybe the first period game where you have so you're not just carrying all the stuff on your own, you have a sack that gives you a reason why you can carry a whole bunch more things than you could have in your hands. And I think that's the reason why the backpack is implemented so frustratingly poorly.
I kind of liked the backpack. There were things I liked about it, with that you put it down and it flops open, and you pick it up, it flops close again,
you
automatically put on your back.
But the idea that like you can't just like have the backpack and just like in later games you totally could find a thing and put it in your backpack. Here, to interact with your backpack or even see them in your inventory, you have to take the pack off, or the knapsack, as I called it. You can actually just type sack. I went through half this game typing the word knapsack until I finally just put it in memory so I could just hit paste because I kept typing sack, and it's a really awkward word to type for some reason.
I did that with the word
sack.
I did that with the word hieroglyphics.
Hieroglyphs. I then switched to hieroglyphs. Yeah, it's my thing. So, okay, we have the same experience there. But I found like it was clearly such an early implementation of backpack. Because if you do your inventory and you've got, like, say, a shovel in your hand and 20 things in your backpack, it'll say, your inventory will say shovel, backpack, or knapsack in this case, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And you have to take the knapsack off or open it or whatever, and then it, like, puts it on the ground, opens it up, and now you can see what's inside it. And that is much more realistic. Like, you can see how if you're inventing a backpack for the game, that's how you might implement it. I can also imagine in the language how it'd be like its own thing. It's like you take it and you put it away. It's going to be an object that's a container and it moves out. And then it comes back into the room and it's suddenly there. And how I can see programmatically why you'd implement it in a way that would cause you to have to take it off and put it back on. But I found it kind of weird and awkward. And I can see, I think that's why I think it's such an early one, because like later games never implemented this way. If you have a backpack, you can just put things in it and take stuff out, and the backpack's with you all the time. So I think it might be the first, is what I'm saying. My gut says this is the first instance in a text adventure of a backpack. I'm going out on that limb.
I would like to talk about the size of the game and the rooms and the things, and I have more homework for our
excellent. This is, hit me with this sizes is, and numbers and homework.
Sure. There are 77 rooms in this game, 81 being average for an Infocom game, so almost average. Vocabulary is a little thin compared to the average. 613 word vocabulary in Infidel compared to 976 words in the average Infocom game. Did you feel limited by the words in this game?
I did not. Nope,
me
I
neither.
Did not feel limited. Nope, I don't think I, in fact, I don't think I ever ran into that at all. I don't, can't remember a time where there wasn't a word available that I thought should. I didn't, and for such an early game, too. No, I didn't play fight the parser at all, and I didn't find the rooms limited because it felt right for exploring a pyramid.
Yes, yeah, I agree. And I mean, the vocabulary is a third smaller than the usual, and it, yeah, I didn't have to guess the word at all. So
there's only so many things you interact with, so I guess you would need a large vocabulary.
There's many things. There are many things you interact with.
I'd have to like branch out and go in the city or go shopping. Like there's whole parts of the language you wouldn't need because it's all just about exploring one sort of thing with a barge in it.
A barge. There's 57 objects in this game, with 36 being the average. So kind of
that's
a lot of items. Yeah. So, but there's a new stat that I would like to introduce. I found in the spring 1984 issue of the New York Times newsletter, they have an article called The Infocom Scoreboard, where they have a lot of the same stats that I have been relying on, which I got from the Infocom fact sheet online. The number of rooms and the vocabulary and stuff, but they break out in a couple of interesting ways. For the first 10 games from Zork 1 to Infidel, they show the number of internal rooms. Like I said, for this game, it's 77. But they also have the number of external rooms, like what it seems like there are. In Infidel, there is an infinite number, it says, of external rooms because the desert. Can go on forever, right? And Enchanter does it the same way because there's a path that goes on forever. And then, like in Sorcerer, it says internally there's 84 rooms, but externally it seems like there's 110. So I thought that was an interesting way of looking at the data. But the column I really enjoyed, and I have not seen this before, is ways of dying. How many ways are there to die? Now, this data is here for the first 10 games of first 10 Infocom games. I want to know if someone can programmatically go through the Z machine, Z code files, and generate a definitive list of how many ways there are to die in each game. I would totally love to use that data. And in Infidel, there are 40 ways to die.
So you'd be able to check your program. If you write something to go through the Zed Machine code, you can check it against, like, does your program come up with 41 for this?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I guess how many different ways, how many times the you are dead code is function is called or whatever. So just for comparison, Zork 1 has 28 ways to die. Enchanter has 17 ways to die. What else have we played? Suspended has only 6 ways to die. And Deadline only has 2 ways to die. Infidel has 40. Anyway, I thought that was a super interesting stat, and I want to know if it's possible to generate that for the other rest of the games.
Funny thing about ways to die, I'm searching my notes here. I remember a point because you read about it's all spoilery. We'll come back to ways to die at the end. I okay. Foresaw something in this game and I took a note about it early and it came true, but I guess I can't talk about it because we're on this side of the spoiler fence. We'll come back to it. I'll move it into my spoilery notes.
Right. So now what?
We talked about this being influenced by things like Indiana Jones or whatever, and I actually, in my notes, wrote, some of these rooms totally make me feel like Indiana Jones. There was a note that says, Treasury, you are in the Chamber of Reconstruction of the Body, the Treasury. To the west is a doorway leading back to the burial chamber. In the room is a large granite table. Cut out from the top of this table are 3 circles of polished granite. The left disc is empty, and it is 1 inch above the top of the table. Sitting in the middle disc is a scarab, and the middle disc is slightly below the top of the table. The right disc is empty, and it is 1 inch above the top of the table. Like, very evocative, but clearly made me think of that scene where Indiana Jones is looking at that little platform and has the bag mm-hmm. of sand. And I'm like, and so I found the writing yeah. in this game very evocative that way. Like, they describe these rooms and I could totally see it, and I could see kind of the puzzle, and it was like really atmospheric writing. I really liked a lot of the writing in this. And made me think, me feel like Indiana Jones, but just totally like a D-bag Indiana yes. Jones.
and your description of that puzzle reminds me that I thought that the puzzles were very, very thematic, and it seemed like stuff that, like in Indiana Jones, stuff that could have been done maybe in a far-fetched sort of way with the materials that were available in ancient Egypt. A lot of the puzzles yes. are about balance, about, you know, there's, you know, sometimes you're playing a game and whatever, you're in Zork, whatever, and all of a sudden there's electrical stuff and there's a dam, and it's just stuff that's like thrown in, you know, crazy stuff that maybe seems out of place. And this one, it all seemed very thematically appropriate. And so a lot of the puzzles were about balance, about you know, things that I don't know. And I also felt that the map, this is getting out there, the map felt very balanced to me, symmetrical. You know, a lot of the rooms, there'd be a room off to the left, and
it's supposed to be like a real pyramid. And I think, or at least mm-hmm. that's how it felt. It felt very authentic to a person who doesn't know anything about pyramids. But I also sure. felt it seemed balanced and seemed like, because it was talking basically about like these four kind of gods, and so it was divided into these four sections, and it all did seem to make sense, very atmospheric, and it seemed to make logical sense. So you're right, like the traps and the things in the rooms all dealt with wood and sand and stone and gravity and water and fire, mm-hmm. and like it did feel like nothing would pull me out of the idea that I was in a pyramid.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I like that. The protagonist, the anti-hero, was sort of, I mean, not a good guy, and really maybe not up to the task. He didn't know as much as he thought he knew. And, you know, often in these games, I feel like I'm trying to figure out something the protagonist knows, like in Cutthroats. The guy clearly, he's an accomplished diver. Clearly he knows how to scuba dive. I don't know how to scuba dive, so I have to figure out how the equipment works, even though the character knows those things. And this one, I felt like neither me nor the protagonist knows what to do, because he's incompetent.
Exactly. You know, that's actually a really good point. And intentionally, like they've picked this guy who is totally in over his head.
Yeah.
That's a really good point.
Why, thank you. Can we talk about the hieroglyphics?
Yes, let's talk about those ASCII-based hieroglyphics.
Yes, so
they're one-to-one correspondence to the English language.
Right. So throughout this game, there are these hieroglyphs which are written on things, and if you read them, if you figure it out, it really tells you how the game. How to do things. It tells you the solutions to puzzles in hieroglyph form, if you can decode the hieroglyphs. Now, I read in a couple of places that the hieroglyphs are not necessary to complete the game. I read a couple of blogs and stuff. He said, like, they got through the game. I think someone emailed us and said they got through the game without bothering with the hieroglyphs. I found them helpful, and they in themselves were a fun puzzle, figuring out what words the symbols mean. I felt like I absolutely needed them. There's some puzzles I would not have solved without being told exactly what to do because I decoded the hieroglyphs. I'm curious about you and the hieroglyphs, Carrington. Did you figure them out? Did you find them useful? Did you even bother?
I figured them out. I assumed they were essential. I don't know that I could have completed the game without either decoding the hieroglyphs or looking up answers, because the hieroglyphs literally... Now, I did have a strange relationship with the hieroglyphs, because you'd decode a hieroglyph and it would tell you if, like, literally tell you what to do in a puzzle. Now, a lot of times there were multiple hieroglyphs, so you'd put them together. You'd decode four different ones, and it would tell you, like, the first step, the second step. But it literally was saying, do this, then this, then this, then this, and it will open a secret door. It's like, and there's no way you would know how to do it. Like, there's in particular, there's a secret door you open that, without the hieroglyphs, like, you couldn't randomly do it. Like, you have to do certain things and press certain things. And I did pause at one point during the game and thought, isn't it odd that they give all these instructions? So, like, if you're preparing this and you don't want people raiding your pyramid, why are you putting accurate solutions? I thought if I did this, I would totally spend, press the red button, stand on the square when you do it, infidel. Like, it seemed, like, I keep thinking, shouldn't I not be trusting these? Because if it was my pyramid, I'll tell you, do not follow those things because I'm going to mess with you.
Yeah, that's weird. In that same vein, I thought it was very funny that there would be a wooden beam, and written on it in hieroglyph is the word beam, and there would be a piece of treasure, and then written on it in hieroglyph is the word treasure. It's just like,
it should actually say highly useful beam. Because, like, my goodness, that was a handy beam.
Yes. Anyway, I just thought it was funny that, I mean, they lead you along, and you have to, of course, learn what the words mean, but just, like, imagine a world where you just wrote the name of the thing on everything.
I liked it, though, because they give you, like, a whole bunch of them to start off with in the feed list. Like, it gives you, like, the word queen and left and all these things, and then little bits you can figure out, like the word the. So you get all those basic words. And then it's neat how you look at it. You go, okay, well, oh, that's a number. Oh, again, and then you see other ones. You're like, oh, these are how they're doing the numbering system. Bingo, I've got 0 through 9. And then this is a direction, and you start to understand how they're writing directions. And it's neat how the game, as you move around the thing back and forth, you start to put together the vocabulary of the hieroglyphs. And I enjoyed that. Like, it was a neat little meta puzzle in a sense. So I dug that a lot. Speaking of the beam, though, one thing, my friends and I, we like to play escape games, which are kind of like Infocom games, but just, you know, less murderous. And they'll always give you the, hey, you're about to go in an escape game, do you have any questions? And the question my buddies and I always ask, do we use things more than once? Like, it's like because some escape games, like, you're done with the lock, you put it away. You're done with, you get a letter, you're done, you put it away. You never have to use it. And then sometimes they do sneaky things like, oh, no, yeah, we're going to use things more than once. You think you're done with it, you better not throw it in a drawer because you're going to need it again. And this is a game where you need stuff more than once. And I'm never a big fan of that. Like, it just because I'm not as good at it. I like it when it's like, I find the whip. There's not a whip in this game. I'm just using the episode. You find a whip. You use the whip to fend off the bats. You're done with the bats, you're done with the whip. And so I kind of like that. This isn't one of those games. So remember where you have your
stuff. Using things more than once is kind of unusual in Infocom games. Normally, you find your use for it, you use it once, and then
in most
throw
adventure
it away.
Games, it's a one-to-one use. Yeah. But here's things where, like, it's more than once. So it's not, I don't want to spoil you about it, but it's something that I don't like quite as much, but did seem to make sense thematically. Like, you're in this pyramid with very little inventory, and there's only so many things available to you for you to use. Like, in the story of this, you can't run off to the store and get more things. You got to use what you find. So it kind of makes sense that you would try to find multiple uses for the stuff that you have. But it did throw me a bit. There was a later puzzle that it never even occurred to me to use the most obvious object because I had already used that object before. But I like the descriptions. I have a whole bunch of notes. My notes are all just filled with me copying out room descriptions because I just thought they were so good. Like, they're just so good and atmospheric. I really like the writing in this game.
I did not copy out any room descriptions because in Encrusted, I was unable to select text and copy it to the clipboard, which is a bug I put in. Oh, I see. I should have done that.
Right. Just take screenshots.
Could have done that.
You're playing a Snapchat. Was it block it? So. There was humor. We could talk about the funnies.
Yeah.
There were lots of little funny things.
What was funny?
Like, the game itself is not a humor game. Like, this, and it's you know, your D-bag explorer, and you're left on your own because you're so jerky to people, and it's a life or death situation you're in. Like, it's not in any way a comedy game, and yet being Infocom game, I think they couldn't resist putting in comedy stuff Like there's a sticker you get in a trunk and you just read it. It says this trunk was inspected by numbers 8 and 6.5. This reality was manufactured by tiny elves from the Bosbar Pyramid Construction Company, a jointly owned subsidiary of Frobosco Magic Village Industries, Michael Berlin and Patricia Fulgerman, chief engineers. So I dug that. Like little things like that. And there's holes, like they've been digging trying to find this pyramid. And if you look in the holes, did you ever look in the holes? You see, you get funny responses.
No, I like the funny stuff that happened when you're out in the desert and you have not enough water and you start to hallucinate.
Yeah.
And you get all sorts of weird descriptions of things that are there, but they're not there, of course.
Yeah. So I looked in the one hole. It says, so I said, look in hole. Response is, never mind that. Here's a better problem. You dig a hole 52 feet by 20 feet by 0.105 yards. It takes you 5 hours, 11 minutes, and 2 seconds. You sweat off 30 grams of water per hour, and your best friend just ran off with the rent money. Now, how much sand is in the hole you dug? Well, that's a strange response for the game. So just little things like that. I just liked it. Like there was not a lot of those, and it was mostly before you went in the pyramid. But there were a couple of things like that that you could read things, read the matchbook and stuff, and there was some funny stuff. And I did like, we talked about the vocabulary and not being limited. I liked that you get pickaxe and you can just type axe because I'm sick of typing pickaxe. And I like that you can type sack instead of knapsack. Like these are little things, but I appreciated them.
Nice. You're easily pleased sometimes. And easily amused.
Well, I also tried to play around with things. Like you put things in and see what can fit in. And so I tried to put the sack in the sack. And it says, sure, just like a Klein bottle, eh? That was good.
Nice. Nice.
And I examined myself. I said, examine me. It says, how do you propose I accomplish that? And they told me in AI school that the intelligent creatures were on the other side of the keyboard. So yeah, so there's some pretty funny responses to like little quippy things. So I dug it.
Nice.
When I can't remember the exact quote, but when I said to search myself, like search me, it said something like, okay, I found one empty head. So anyway, I dug it.
Nice. I learned some words.
Ooh, what were the words that you learned?
I learned the word now a long time ago when I was a kid and this came out. This is the reason I learned the word infidel.
Wait, had you played this game before?
No, but I was aware of it.
Okay.
I mean, having, you know, reading computer magazines and computer catalogs and stuff.
Right.
I saw the word infidel and I did not know what it meant. And then, so anyway. I learned how to spell hieroglyphics.
I learned how to cut and paste hieroglyphics.
I learned the word a lintel. Lintel, a horizontal support of timber, stone, concrete, or steel across the top of a door or window.
I thought we and got a lintel in something else.
You always say that.
The game was
that.
Using a balancing lintel. I know, I do always say that. Maybe I'm thinking something different. What was the game that had the piano balancing on stuff? So that wouldn't have been a lintel.
That was Hollywood Hijinks.
Yeah. Hmm. Anyway. So what else did you learn?
And then the other word
was...
The
lintel is the thing... Yeah, the thing that goes above a door or whatever, right? It's a lintel?
Above a door, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And the other word I learned was... I don't know how to pronounce it. Ganglions. A structure containing a number of nerve cell bodies. Which I think is just a word kind of used in passing in this game.
That's where people get cysts. That's how I know...
Yes.
Ganglion,
right, that's like a skin issues. Like, right,
I think it's the only context in which I know that word.
Yeah,
happily having avoided it myself, but I think people get it on their arms or something. Anyway, it's not a tumor.
It's not a tumor.
That's it. Those are all the words you learned.
That's it.
Yeah, it has such a big vocabulary. I guess you've got a big vocabulary too now.
I guess so. So was this game as bad as we had been told?
Not for me. I don't think at all. I'm not in any way would this be my favorite game we played, but I enjoyed it. I was happy to have played it. I'm very anxious to talk about the ending of this game. I thought it was super atmospheric. It was not really that difficult, but I liked the puzzles, which seemed fair and thematically appropriate, and I liked the meta puzzle of having to figure out the hieroglyphs. I liked the setting, because ancient Egypt stuff is, I think, really cool. I thought the feelies were amazing. Like, honestly, I don't see how anybody would say this is a bad game. And the fact that it doesn't seem to be universally praised is surprising to me. Like, again, I don't think it would, I don't even think it would make, you know, top five of the games we've played, but it certainly wouldn't be in the bottom five. I am happy I played it, and I thought it was really cool. What about you?
Certainly not among the, not the strongest Infocom game. But yeah, quality, decent game. Nothing wrong with it. I think it
would be better than Cutthroats.
This might even be a good game for someone. This might be a good first Infocom game.
Ooh.
It's not super hard.
It's not super hard. It's totally not super hard. I did get stuck, but it's not super hard.
It kind of has built-in clues with the hieroglyphics. If you're willing to figure it out, it's not punishing like some of them. And it's not, doesn't feel too big. You know, it's kind of linear, and it doesn't feel, anyway, I might recommend this game, even though it's not the best game, as a introduction to Infocom games.
Hmm. Certainly, anyway, if you handed somebody the original folio package, the one I have, mm-hmm. it would really let them know, like, the idea, like, it's kind of iconic in its Infocom-ness, like a really neat package with really neat mm-hmm. feelies that lead you into a world that picks up right after the feelies, and the game kind of refers to the feelies, and like, so, and the parser is not one you're going to fight with, and the writing is really good. Like, so this would be very indicative. Like, if somebody played this and they completely hated it, not because of maybe the story or the character you're playing, but they hated the gamingness of it, then that would mm-hmm. tell you that you shouldn't play Infocom games. Like, this is very much an iconic or a representative Infocom game, and I think and a
yes.
good one.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yep,
that's my review. It's fine. It's good.
I did find there was a bunch of learning by death that I probably could have mm-hmm. avoided if I didn't barge ahead and I read more hieroglyphs sometimes before I took more actions. But there's mm-hmm. some things where there's a couple times I died where you just take a thing and then you die. And now I know not to take that thing. I'm like, ah, right. So there's a bit of that, which was kind of frustrating. We talk about that on the other side of the spoiler fence. But
if your Z machine interpreter has an unlimited undo, then death is not that big a deal. I was getting
it's
so
not that big of a deal.
I was getting just cavalier. I would just like try something and die, just like undo a few times. I wasn't even saving the game anymore. I would just like, there was no point. You could just.
Boy, you
just
really undo. Trusted that beta version of the emulator. Huh?
I did.
I
did.
Saving.
It, mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I got bit a couple times, but I mean, because it is early software, but it's all right. It was okay. I'm glad I tried it. And man, that auto mapping.
Thematically, that works too, that you're just going to dive in and be out of, over your head and just draw a thing all totally on your own. So that probably was a good way to play this game, this particular game.
So without talking about the ending, which we will talk about after the spoiler fence, did you finish? Did you win?
I did indeed. I finished. I got my 400 points. Mm-hmm. 400. My score was scrolling at the very bottom. Your score is 400 out of possible 400 in 336 moves. This gives you the rank of a master adventurer. I will very also good. Say that was not the only rank I got. I got earlier ones that were lower scores and ways that I died. But I did finally get to the very end, and I did. I don't know if it's a game that you can get to the end and not get 400 out of 400. That's kind of how I knew I had finished it correctly or finished it like totally. And so I did finish it. And I did look up a couple of things to InvisiClues. Mm-hmm. So I did a bit of cheating. And, you know, so be it. I tried not to, but I was stuck and the game was going long. And it wasn't even that difficult a game. So it's just, I shouldn't have needed, by now I shouldn't have needed InvisiClues. But I have to admit, hanging my head in shame, that I did need them, I did use them, and there you go. What about you?
Right.
Did you cheat?
I had to cheat. I got 400, 400, and 540 moves. Master Adventure.
Oh, wow, that's way more than me. Normally you have fewer moves than me. Especially with all your fancy undoes. How'd you do like 200 moves more than me?
I don't know how that happened, actually.
Yeah, mine's 336.
I did a ton
of saving.
Yeah.
I have like 100 saves for this. I would save. I'd try things. They wouldn't work. I'd go back, and then I'd go for my save and do it kind of in the fastest way possible. So I may not be very more than the minimum moves you could do.
Mm. I want to talk about... Yes, I did cheat, but first I want to mention that... the site that I use for the InvisiClues, resonant.org, that has it's my favorite InvisiClues site, because rather than just being a text file, it uses some clever JavaScript. So it just, it like the InvisiClues, it gives you one clue at a time. So you can't accidentally read too much.
You're saying that all in the present tense.
Well, yes, because the site's gone.
the site is gone.
Yeah, it's been down for weeks. I think I noticed it was down when we were playing our last game, Cutthroats, or whatever last time I needed it. And it's been down, and I wrote to them. I wrote to the guy who runs it, and I said, it's been down for weeks. Is it coming back? And he said, I'm very sorry to hear that we had a major disaster here in August. It's possible we might eventually be able to recover, but the minimum time frame is going to be months from now, and the outcome isn't guaranteed. So I offered to throw some money at the problem to help if they needed a new server or something, and they said the biggest problem at the moment is going to be getting the data back. And so make backups, kids. That's my advice to you. Backup your stuff. I don't know any of the details about why that great site is gone, but I hope it's not gone forever. So I had to find another site that had just had the info, had the InvisiClues as a text file. I accidentally saw the answer to one that I'm pretty sure I would have figured out on my own. I needed help with a couple of things that we can talk about after this offense. But at one of them, I could not figure out a couple of little things, and I felt stupid when I saw the answer. I mean, I was just like, oh, really? I was overthinking it or something. So yeah, I had to cheat, and a little bit, not too bad. A couple times I thought I had cheated, but then I realized, oh, I got that answer from the hieroglyphics, so it wasn't cheating. It was figuring out the meta puzzle. So I think every Infocom game should have hieroglyphics to help me out. I think that would help me.
I wonder if, speaking of meta puzzles, I wonder if at this point in the podcast listening, Mark Pilgrim has paused to send us a reminder of the InvisiClues stuff in Pitch Dark, or if he got to this point and hadn't yet sent us that reminder. So Mark, if you're listening, I was just wondering if we're going to get a tweet or email from you, and then you will have moved on and realized, yeah, I was aware of that.
He already rage quit listening.
Totally, because I had complained that I was going on an airplane. I was going to go and play on the plane. I was bringing my stuff with me, and then that I'd have no internet access, which means no InvisiClues. And I think he just like tweeted me like, ahem. And then I linked to Pitch Dark. I'm like, yeah, but I was playing it in a different thing. And yeah, Pitch Dark is pretty amazing, though, which I'm going to use for the next one. So I will have self-contained InvisiClues. Someone need know at resonant.org. Anyway, I dig the meta puzzles. They're all meta puzzles.
It's all a big meta puzzle, right? How do I get this Apple II emulator installed on my computer so that I can use Pitch Dark? That's part of the meta puzzle.
Yep. Number sign dollar bracket bracket dollars. All hieroglyphics kind of look like dropped carriers.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, that would have been a great one. It should have been like, you read it, it's like the Queen's carrier has dropped.
What else can we talk about before we hit the spoiler fence? Anyway, thumbs up to this game.
Thumbs up too. And it's funny reading about it, how divisive the game was at the time, how it seemed to be relatively poorly received. A lot of negative feedback. Like, I guess some people liked it, but there was a lot of negative stuff. I think probably to do with the character stuff in it, and probably also to do with the ending, which I think was also a divisive thing for people. It's something we'll talk about on the other side of the spoiler notes.
But I think both of those things are pluses.
I completely agree. That's absolutely where I'm going with that. Exactly. 100%. But reading stuff, it seems they were things that turned off a lot of people. But I thought it was refreshing and interesting, and as a kind of an experimental different way to go, I liked it. I appreciated it.
Yeah, I think both of those things, maybe people weren't ready for it, but it was pushing the medium forward. And there were Infocom was always trying new things, and I think that those are examples of that.
Yep, me too. And so I
to their credit.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I super dug it. Absolutely positive feedback from me.
Yeah. Good.
Cool. So shall we leap the fence?
Yeah, let's pick our next game before we leap the fence.
Oh, yes. Name that game.
I'm scared. I'm a little frightened right now to say this.
Why is that?
I hesitate, but for pacing and to get it all done in time,
I'm scared.
it's time to play Zork 3, Carrington.
Oh, no. Okay, so that'll be our game for January.
Yeah, 2020. Yeah.
Okay, back to the world of the Great Underground Empire we go. Oh, man. Zork 2 was hard. Zork 1 was hard. Zork 3 is going to be hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So we'll Zork 3, the Dungeon Master, will be our
ooh, game. So it's a sex game. Cool.
Sure. It could be. yep. So that'll be next. And
now, if I recall, yeah. I think like the original Zork, which I know wasn't the original adventure or whatever, but like the original Zork got divided up. And for the most part, like Zork 1 was kind of half of the original Zork, and Zork 2 was the other half of the original Zork, and there was a little bit left over. And I guess that goes into Zork 3 plus a whole bunch of new stuff. Is that right? Do you know? Or is it all from the original one?
I believe... I don't know. Okay. We'll find out. I believe I don't know. I have no idea. I could say something, but I don't know anything. Okay. Yeah,
we'll find out when we research. Research,
right? Yeah. Oh, and we didn't even talk about the guy who emailed in and asked us if we were going to play when we're done. Play the original full MIT version of Zork. I was like, I'm already tired.
just thinking about that. I'm glad to take Zork in three stages. Frankly, if all of Zork 1, 2, 3 was a single game, this might have been a one episode podcast.
Yeah, just throw up our hands. You know, but I like Zork 2 a lot more than Zork 1. So I'm hoping love Zork 3 more than Zork 2.
At least that's my memory of it. I'd like to go back and listen to the episodes to see if that's the case. But my memory of it is I have a more fond recollection of Zork 2 than Zork 1. But maybe that's because Zork 1 was the first game we played and maybe I didn't know what I was doing yet and it was more difficult or whatever. Or also maybe it was just such an early game it was less polished. Like, or maybe both of those things or other things. Who knows? But my memory, like as of this recording, I do, if I was forced to replay one of those, without hesitation, I would say Zork 2. So that's at least how I'm recalling it. We'll see. I don't know if that actually represents how I felt at the time. But I do know as soon as you said Zork 3, I had a bit of trepidation. So.
Yeah, no, it's supposed to be hard. But you know what? We have the whole internet at our disposal. We don't have resonant.org anymore, but we can cheat in other ways.
Mark Pilgrim once again pauses. How many times am I going to tell you this?
Another angry tweet.
Awesome. Okay. Zork 3 for next time. And we do both recommend playing Infidel. So hope that you did. And if you haven't, then stop listening now because we're going to leap over the spoiler fence and we're going to talk about Infidel in a much more specific way. We are going to spoil this ending, which is an ending you should not know in advance. Like, honestly, if you're ever going to play one of these games, just play this game and don't read about it because the ending is very interesting. And it'd be much more interesting if you, like me, don't know what's coming. So although I want to talk about that because I kind of knew what was coming. But if you mostly don't know what's coming, then I think that would be good. And it's a game we would recommend regardless. And I think it's got neat feelies and a fun experience. So we do recommend it. And we're about to talk in very specific ways where we will spoil puzzles and spoil plot and kind of just spoil the experience. So if you've already played or you know you're never going to, then follow us onto the other side of the spoiler fence. But otherwise, pause now. You can always come back and listen to the rest of the episode on a future date after you've played Infidel. That wraps it. That tells people, right? That's a good enough warning.
That's it. We did. That we Excellent. Warned. We warned them off.
Here be spoilers.
The ending of this game was spoiled for me probably 20 years ago. I mean, I reading a lot about old computers and whatever. Just I knew how the one thing I knew about this game was, you know, it was about pyramids, and I knew how it ended. So the surprise ending was not a surprise to me. Was it? Had you managed to get spoiler free to the ending?
Yes, playing the game. I came into the game having no idea that essentially at the end of the game, and dear Lord, we're on the other side of spoiler friends, please, I hope you listened. This is the warning. You died in this game. You cannot avoid it. The pyramid you are buried alive in this pyramid. This is how this game will end. There is no way to end other than buried alive. And so early on, one of my notes says, not early, maybe midway through the game, but early in the notes that I wrote, it says, my daydreams about wealth probably are boding poorly. And then I quote this thing in the game when you're playing, you get on that barge, which I thought was neat. There's a barge inside the pyramid. And it says, you close your eyes for a moment, picturing the barge you'll someday own, the yacht fully rigged and crewed. You open your eyes and shake your head, anxious to make your dream reality. And then I wrote, that is some heavy-handed foreshadowing. I am totally going to die in this pyramid. So it was about halfway through the game, I realized I am such a D-bag. They are really laying on heavily handed that it's not just that I'm looting. It's I am like a bad person for looting. And it just, that's the thing that made me kind of aware this story is going to a place that doesn't end well for the protagonist. So, and I thought that was totally reasonable. So nothing outside of the game spoiled it, but the game gave me this like looming sense of foreboding that this pyramid is totally going to give me my comeuppance. And I thought that was excellent. That's another reason why I'm positive on this game, because it wasn't an ending that came out of nowhere. It was an ending that was deserved and I think heavily foreshadowed. And I thought, so I say, well done. That was excellent. But yeah, I wrote it all caps. Yes. That is some heavy-handed foreshadowing.
It was well done. And I had also read a long time ago that the only way to get out of this game with 400 points is to die. I mean, you get the big treasure at the end, and the whole pyramid collapses in on you, and you are buried in piles and tons and tons of sand, and you are super dead, and
not just regular dead,
super dead. And I didn't copy paste the text, but even in death, his like last moment. It was just like that someone's going to find me in 1,000 years and then they'll know that I did it. He's clinging on to that.
Like that you never get alive, but you earn the treasure. Like you're going to get famous when they find your body. You're like, boy, you just still hang on to that, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. But I had also read many years ago that kind of if you want to win the game in a cheaty sort of way, it was suggested that it's completely possible to get to the very end and don't take the last treasure and just navigate your way back out of the maze and back into the desert and quit the game. And you don't have full points, but you do have a lot of treasure and you survive.
Oh, that's smart. Now, could you do that? You have to use that one room collapses with the beam. I don't know that you could get to the end and get back out.
Oh, because the beam thing.
Right, because that one room collapsed.
Because you can't get through that hallway.
You could go in and get a bunch of stuff, but I don't think you could make it to the sarcophagus and still be able to navigate back out and get. And also, you would have used your water because you eat the beef, so you wouldn't have. I think you would die in the desert before you. If you could get out, you wouldn't make it back to your encampment. I think you can't get to the sarcophagus and win, but you could get in and get a bunch of stuff. You can get the gold, emeralds, you get those little clusters or whatever. You could get a bunch of treasure and have found where this pyramid is and get out. But I don't think you could make it to the sarcophagus. I think once you're there, you're committed.
I think so. You're right. You're right.
I didn't really think about it.
Anyway, I thought it was an interesting loophole that someone had figured out that you could.
But this character wouldn't do that. This character is just hell-bent on going to go to the end. There's no way this character would have done that. So, which again is a well-written character. It's not us. It's you're playing this role, and so it is. And the beam is the thing I was saying that you use more than once. But the beam has like I like the bit. There's that bit where you're in that room where you hack away at the plaster or whatever, but then to reach the higher part of the plaster blocking the door, you take the beam, you stick it in the niches on the side, and you stand up on it, you hack away with the axe on the plaster, and that causes the floor to give away, but you're safe because you're standing on the beam. And it's not really a puzzle, but it's really atmospheric. Like it's another one of those things where I love chipping away, and then you feel the rumbling, and then all the sand pours down, and the ground pops up from beneath you, but because you're on the beam, you're okay, and you can hop into the next room and grab the beam with you.
Yeah.
And just like, I was like, that is so good. And I don't think you can fall down there. I don't think you can make that. It's only hacking the top half makes the floor go out. So you're always going to be safe from it. So it's not really a trap in that sense, like in game sense. But it's really good, like that kind of stuff. It's telling you bits of this can collapse and you have to be careful. And there's the room that would squash you if you don't use the beam. And I dug it. Like I like the atmosphere of this game a lot. I love pyramid stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that beam does get a lot of use. I mean, you have to use it basically for three separate.
The beam named Beam gets a lot of use.
Yes. Yeah, there's that. And then I think the panel thing was with all these bricks in it. That's one of the things I had to cheat on.
Oh, because the hieroglyph tells you press like the first one, the third one, and the fifth one or whatever.
Yes. Yeah. So something went wrong, actually. But I had to cheat on this, and I wasn't sure if something went wrong with Encrusted or if I confused the game by doing something I just didn't expect. I had taken, I took the first brick and I went away with it and I put it on top of the altar and I was just trying to figure out what to do with the bricks. And then later I took the third brick and the fifth brick and then a new passageway is supposed to appear when you take the first, third, and fifth brick. It didn't happen for me.
I think you have to press the bricks. You don't take them, you push them in.
Oh, I took them out.
Oh, really? I think it was you're supposed to press them. Press in one, three, and five.
I removed them. Well, even when I finally got it to work, I just removed the bricks and just left them there sitting in the hallway. So I think I just have to manipulate
just make
them
it a mess.
Somehow. Interesting. Anyway, but due to, I don't know if it was Encrusted or it was because I just confused the game, the passageway did not appear. So I was stuck and had to get some help. So,
and that's one of those ones where I think the hieroglyphs tell you, because if you don't decode the hieroglyphs or look up the hieroglyphs to be told, you press the first, the third, and the fifth one, or the first, the second, and the fifth, or whatever the numbers were, you're never going to do that randomly because there's like nine bricks there and you have to do only these things in this order. And the hieroglyphs tell, again, weirdly, the people said, well, we've got to leave you a note telling you how to get, why make a secret passage if you write down on the walls how to open it up? Makes no sense. But I think that's the kind of thing that, like, for people to say you don't need the hieroglyphs at all, that doesn't make any sense, because without the hieroglyphs, you literally can't know which bricks to press and or take.
Right.
At least I don't think so.
Yeah.
Other than trial and error, I guess we wouldn't even know to press three of them.
Yeah. No, you totally need help. And I was not, hadn't figured out enough of the hieroglyphs at that point yet. So, you know.
Did you end up decoding the hieroglyphs?
I did. Yes.
Yep,
and
too.
I was kind of at a disadvantage because my interpreter, the Encrusted, was not using it was using a proportional font instead of a fixed width font, which made it much more hard because some of the
Some of the hieroglyphs are multiple characters and you wouldn't know. Oh, yeah,
stacked up
would make it what
that made it. Yeah, that made it harder for me. So I was on advanced mode, and I still managed to finish the game. That's why it took me 200 more moves than you.
It took me a lot longer than you.
I didn't realize until way too late what my issue was. You proportional font is not your friend in this game.
Yeah, because they're stacked up and they're multiple characters, and you have to know this group is a word. So otherwise, that'd be really hard. I'd be like, wow, I'm impressed. I don't think I could have done that.
Well, I just did it because I was too stupid to figure out to do it the right way. So.
I'm impressed anyway.
When I got to the antechamber burial chamber area, I could not figure out how to deal with the slab or the sarcophagus or anything. So I checked the Invisiclues, and the hints are all talking about the goddess rooms and the book. And I was like, "What are you talking about?" So I managed to make it to the last section of the game.
You didn't know that those were the rooms for the.
Well, I hadn't. There was a whole other part of the game that I hadn't gotten to yet.
Oh, I see.
Because there's near the beginning in the first room. There's a steep staircase that you go down there and you die if you go down it. And I hadn't gone down into that area because I couldn't figure out how to do it, which was really easy. You just use a rope to go.
Use the rope and chuck it over the edge and you climb down. You don't die if you go down there.
So easy. And yeah, I didn't do it. So anyway, I had made
it to
the
first area I went to. Yeah, that's literally the first thing I did was tying the rope, and then that's the first area I went down to. That's so funny.
Yeah. So, yeah. So anyway, I'd made it to the last area, the denouement area of the game, and I couldn't do it because I needed more information that I should have gotten very close to the beginning of the game because I didn't figure out how to use a rope because it was hidden in my backpack. So
I do remember that's an area that I think one of the reasons I didn't really like the take off the backpack and it opens up and you put your stuff in and put the backpack on is I would frequently forget to put the backpack on. So I'd take off the sack, put things in it, throw the rope on the side, go down. And then I would say like, take off backpack. You don't see a backpack here. I'm like, oh, come on. Where if I put it down? I'd be a very bad adventurer. I was constantly leaving my sack in various places in this pyramid.
Yeah, I did that a couple times.
I did that a bunch of times. It was difficult to teach me that lesson.
Yeah, especially after like the room's been shut off forever because you know, you took the beam and you can't get back there. And oh wait, I left all my stuff in there. Yep. Oops.
It was much restarting because of that. Restarting because of learning by death, like we talked about. A few places where I think like there's that one room that's you shove the trap and the walls squish you. You open the door, the walls come in and they squeeze you. And it just killed me.
I love that. Very, very thematic, very Indiana Jones, very, it was perfect.
But very, you're going to die and then you're going to restart and know to wedge the beam in there. Like, is there a way to know ahead of time that this room is going to squish you?
No.
Well, see that, and I don't like that. Like, there should have been
I think the hieroglyphs actually tell you exactly. One of the hieroglyphs said, stand the beam under the, they said things like, I didn't write down that one, but it was just like stand the beam under the door frame and open the door. That was it.
Was that the one? I thought that was the one telling you to put it under that room that where you got to use the weight to move things around. I like that. I thought that's what that one was talking about. I'm just dumb. But anyway,
that was another one too. Yeah.
Like how did I die here? But you probably know because you're using proportional font, so your hieroglyphs got smaller. It's like, oh look, there's a squishy room coming up because everything's squeezed.
I had the
together.
Advanced hieroglyphs. But there absolutely was some learned by death.
The ring that the guy, like, you now, maybe this is on me. You find a skeleton, it's dead, it's wearing a fancy ring. So I took the ring, put it on, pricked your finger, a couple moves later, the poison hits your heart and you die. So, okay, maybe that's on me. This guy finds the ring and it kills him. But I'm like, wouldn't the poison have been dried out or in this person? It's like, multi-poison actually, ring.
That one, if you examine the ring at some point, the needle can fall out of it. That one is avoidable. That's not a really learned by death. If you really examine that ring, you can save yourself. But
I didn't feel bad
near
about
that
either,
end of the,
but, you know, it killed me.
Yeah. Yeah. You putting on strange rings, you get what you deserve.
This character, come on, I'd totally be putting that ring on.
Yeah, he would. Look at me, I'm fancy with the rings. Near the end,
when it's his high school ring.
There's the two antechambers, one goes to the annex and one goes to the treasure, and you have to do them in the right order. So that's another learn by death thing. Because I went to the northern section first.
Yep.
And then you needed, so that was another thing. Yeah, totally random if you get it right or to get, because you needed the book.
Yeah, basically 50% chance. Right. Yeah. Because you got to get the book and the other thing, the book and the scarab. Yeah. But I like that though. Again, like using those
scarab
things. Using the scarab?
The scarab that had scarab written right on it,
The scarab that has scarab written on it, but again, you using these things. I liked getting the clusters, having to put them in the certain order, and I liked turning the little statues in the order of the gods and stuff. And I liked using the scarab in the book and just like the stuff you're using to solve the puzzles and the puzzles themselves were all very thematically linked. Like it all just held together. I just really liked it.
Yeah,
really, really liked it.
Yeah, me too. I liked it at the very end. I mean, I thought I had solved this puzzle. I got it at the very end in the last room, and there's these four statues keeping holding the lid onto the coffin sarcophagus thing, and you can turn the statues and I'm just about to get the lid off. And I turned the fourth statue, and then they all turned back before I could get the lid off. And I'm just like, I literally felt like I was one move away. I'm just like, no. And because you have to do them in a certain order, which
and then you die.
And then you die. Anyway, so yeah, I felt like the very end, it was teasing me. But I figured it out and felt smart for a second when I figured out the right order. But so I liked it. I liked it. It was fun. It was good. It was a good game.
Me too. I dug it. But I'm looking through my translation of the hieroglyphs, like the one that's like basically put the book on the queen's large area and the scarab on the queen's small area. I'm like, that just tells you how to do this puzzle. Like, so many of these are just like, here is the solution to a puzzle. Like, it's really just, as long as you can translate these hieroglyphs, you can just, for the most part, make it through here with a little bit of learning by death. But yes, I can turn to the northeast and place the second offering to Ra. Like, just, it just tells you these things.
Mm-hmm.
I dug it though. I liked the hieroglyphs a lot. So
yeah, I did too. It made me feel a lot less cheaty than I would have been otherwise in a typical game.
When I died from the ring, death. I wrote it as death by ring. You fall over on your face as a quick acting poison from the ring makes its way to your heart. Bye. As you have died, the great mysteries of the ancient pyramid remain unsolved. Although your desperation has served you well in getting you this far, to get farther requires a wisdom tempered by experience. Your score is 215 out of a possible 400 and 244 moves. 344 moves. This score gives you a rank of a fairly good looter. What I find funny about that is that score at 344 has more moves than my final game. That's why I brought that one up. So I'm saying that, but just shows you like how often I would go back and do like the minimum number of moves once I knew what to do. I frequently right. do that because I'm always worried like I'm going to run out of time or something. I'm just like so paranoid. Or because of this, you've got like, you walk around, at some point you'll get hungry, you have to eat this beef, and that'll make you thirsty, so you drink. And so that makes me feel like there's probably a serious ticking clock. And so I want to do like the fewest moves possible so I don't run, get right to the end of the game and not have enough left. And I get really paranoid.
Optimize moves for sure. Mm. Yeah, no, I've been, well, come on. We've both been bit by that rattlesnake so many times. You start to get a little twitchy about it. Yeah. The water thing. I couldn't figure out how to get water.
You drink it.
Getting water in a canteen.
Crocodiles.
There's crocodiles. And
fill canteen.
Yeah, you go to the riverbank and you fill the canteen. That's all you have to do. But also, you can go in the river where there's crocodiles and then they eat you. So I thought it was more of a puzzle. I just didn't realize that you could get water at the riverbank.
Oh, well, I didn't realize there's enough water there. Right. I did not go in the water because it tells you there's crocodiles. So
I thought there was a big puzzle to get to the water, or to scare the crocodiles away, or maybe there's another place where there was better access to water, or maybe there's water in the pyramid. I several times I went into the pyramid with no water, made it as far as I could with no water, and then eventually I would die. And I had to cheat to figure out how to get water. It was like, oh, you just go to the riverbank and get water? I just really overcomplicated it. And so that was one of the times I felt stupid.
I
so
frequently do
there
that.
There's no hieroglyphics for that, like how to drink water. I don't know. Yeah.
One time I was going to get on something, and I wrote get on me, and it says, I'll get on your case is what I'll do, turkey. It's like the weirdest responses.
That's weird.
Called me a turkey. Called me a turkey. Like, okay. That's not thematic. I dug it. The thing is, it's not super puzzle heavy. There's some good ones. I like the thing with the statue that you go to push and the head falls off. So now you got to pick up the head and then like push the statue to the right position and then put the head down because you need all the weight in those locations. But I still like those kind of things where you know to push it over here, then you get to that edge and you push it over there to like tilt the floor around or whatever. And like, but there weren't a ton of puzzles in this game. Like, it's not a particularly hard game. It's just a very atmospheric one. I like
it. Yeah, me too.
Did you have a favorite part or a part that you hated? Or was fair or unfair or anything like that?
No, there's... Oh, I generally... I told you what I was needed help with, but even with those things, I don't think anything was particularly unfair. I liked the puzzle, particularly with you get the goblets, and then you think it's just treasure. I got some treasure, and then later on, you need those goblets to do the weight and balance puzzle in order to get the scarab. I thought that was neat. It wasn't particularly hard, but it was a fun little puzzle that I thought felt really nice. In the theme of the game, I liked the beginning of just exploring the encampment and finding out like what the guys had left behind for you and where they left it. And the
I like how they say, like, we've put everything you need in your trunk, but we've taken a key.
we've locked the trunk. We hope that you don't
meanies. Survive. Yeah. It's like, we hope you die here. In fact, I think I wrote down their note. It was very funny, the note they leave you. Yes, hereafter you shall pursue your fool dream of the hidden pyramid and its riches alone. May the jackals feed well on your bones. We have left you what you need to get back, though we hope you do not. We put several things you treasure above life itself inside your trunk, locked with your precious padlock, but we could not bear to part with the key, especially after what you said of our rights. We hope the drug we placed in your drink did you harm. If not, we are at least satisfied you slept especially sound while we cleaned out the camp. It's like such a good note.
Yeah,
I like it. Yeah, that's, I really like the writing of this. It's excellently written, I thought. Mm-hmm. I dug it. Anyway, I dug it a lot. I think you're right that if somebody had never played an Infocom game, they could do worse than play this one first. I like it. I've been thinking about it ever since you said that. Like, do I actually agree with that? I think I do.
Oh, good.
I'm not going to go back and edit my response into the early part of the podcast.
Oh, all right. That's okay.
A while, but I've come around to totally agreeing with you.
I doubt we will say the same thing. I don't think we'll say the same thing for Zork 3 Dungeon Master.
Maybe it's going to be our favorite. I do like Dungeons & Dragons, and this has the word Dungeon Master in it, so it's got that going for it.
It's true.
Plus, the Zork games are pretty funny. So we haven't played a funny one in a while, and this will be a funny one. And I like funny games, so bring it.
Good. Fun things are fun.
I think it'll be good.
Let's find out.
Fun things are fun. So I think that probably brings us to the end of this, doesn't it?
I think so.
Okay, well then this has been Eaten by a Gru, the Infocom podcast. If you want, you can send us feedback. You can email us, Gru, that's GRUE, at monsterfeet.com, or you can just hit us up on Twitter, which is nice and easy. He is at Kevin Savitz, I am at Carrington, and we will gladly seal ourselves into your pyramid if you give us a nice review in iTunes, which helps other people find our podcast, and the show notes and such can be found at monsterfeet.com, and thanks to MC Frontalot for walking like an Egyptian. Wait, that's a different band. Anyway, he lets us use his tune as our theme song, and we appreciate it. So there. Next time, we will play Zork 3, the Dungeon Master, and I hope you'll play along with us, and then tell us what you think. And also tell us what you think about Infidel. And you can feel free to spoil it, because we've now played the game.
Thank you for podcasting with me, Darian. Said what I said.
I did, indeed. I'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Walked into the slavering fangs of a lurking Gru.
I like the picture of the Apple II classroom you guys were in.
Oh, it's so good. It's not going to, I guess, only be there till December or something, but they have an Apple II classroom, and then they also have like a 70s or 80s like living room with all like the tech and stuff that you can
sweet.
Like, you can play with it all, and you know.
I was thinking that recently. I'm crazy in love with my girlfriend, but at the moment I live by myself, so this might be my last opportunity to, like, I could decorate my whole place like a late 1970s basement. Like, there's no reason why I should just like wood panel this place and like get all new furniture and go, like, why wouldn't I do that for now? Like, she's in far enough, she's not gonna dump me if I do that. Like, so I could be like, why am I not living in that at the moment, like, and just lean into the pitch. So I'm thinking about it.
You should. You should. And then
I'll invite her over one day, and say, look
what I did. When you move one day, don't clean any of that up. Just move out, leave all that stuff there. The landlord or the next person to move in will just come in and just be like, wow, what was happening here?
People come in like, how long was he living here?